I want to talk about how sometimes we disappoint God. I know I get frustrated and disappointed when I see people doing things that are wrong and they refuse to do what's right. And getting mad and saying things to them, that doesn't work. That only offends them and makes them mad. And this country, there's a lot of people that are upset about what's going on, I'm sure around the whole world, but I don't know what's going around other places than, really, I don't know a whole lot more than East Tennessee, but one of the ways people use venting is politics, and they get all wrapped up in politics, and they think about all the things that are going wrong, all the corruption, all the people refusing to do what's right. It's really pretty simple. Just do what's right. It should be, you know, moral things should guide the world, and it doesn't because there's no morality. So they get all worked up when the government doesn't do what they think that it should be done. And then they get all upset and they get behind one party or the other, and they vow they're going to throw them out when this happens. And realistically, it's like the Crips and the Bloods. They're all corrupt. They're all stealing and in it for themselves and have no morals. One might be worse than the other, but I forget the guy that was it, wasn't Jimmy Stewart. It was somebody. He said, whenever Congress is in session or the legislature is in session, our rights are in jeopardy. It was a very famous, movie star back in, you know, 30, 40 years ago. But anyhow, what about God? Cause as far as the government goes, they're a bunch of reprobates beyond redemption. But if we think about God, he instituted his government and set it up according to his laws. And 613 commandments, 713 commandments, statutes, ordinances, judgments. Very simple. Man gets involved, and you could fill that wall. I don't know. Most people have never been to a law library, but I have. There's rows and rows that are as long as that wall in the law library in Milwaukee I used to spend a lot of time in. Just full millions and millions of pages of laws that man has made to try and improve on what God did with 613 laws. And we've really messed it up. He set up a government and he gave it to us. And it was based off of our needs and what we needed. And of course, we didn't want it. We begged for a king, demanded a king, rejected God, and demanded a king. In 1 Samuel 8, 7, it says, and the Lord said to Samuel, heed the voice of the people in all that they say to you, for they have not rejected you, but they have rejected me, that I should reign over them. That I should not reign over them. So see, they didn't want what God had. And it goes, there's warnings about how they're going to use that position, the power. They're going to steal your money. They're going to use it for their own benefit. They're going to turn your kids into servants for their whims, their desires. Verse 8, it says, according to all the works which they have done since the day that I brought them up out of Egypt, even to this day, which they have forsaken me and served other gods, so they are doing to you also. Now, therefore, heed their voice. However, you shall solemnly forewarn them and show them the behavior of the king who will reign over them. So here when God's people reject him and say, no, we want it our way. We want to do it the way we think. We want to be just like everybody else. God says, all right. Give it to them, but tell them what's going to happen. Now, did we learn our lesson? No. We've never learned our lesson. I did a quick search this morning. I'm sure there's more, but I found 104 places in the Bible where it says God was angry with his people. I'm furious because they had rejected him and sinned against him. And that's where he just where he says that the anger of the Lord was roused against, you know, things like that. Not places where he's disappointed, where his actions show that he's mad, just where it says that he's mad. Most people reject God because they think he's some angry and vengeful God. There's people that aren't here today because of that, and others reject him because he didn't work things out the way they thought he should work it out. Well, hello, welcome to the real world. God doesn't give us things always the way we want and the way we think that they should go. I mean, I thought I had it all worked out back in the late 80s. I had a business. On paper, I was supposed to have a lot of money. And I thought, hey, this is good. We're going to grow it a little more, and I'm going to sell it. And then I had it all worked out in my mind. I'm going to serve you, God, forever, the rest of my life. And I'm not going to have to work. I'm not going to have to worry about the money. I can just, you know, Mary's putting out programs for the kids, and we can just serve you. We're young. We're in our 30s. And, you know, hey, it's all worked out. No problem. Made perfect sense to me. And guess what? Didn't work out like that. All I got left of that business is a piece of paper said I have 24,500 shares of stock that don't exist to anything. Worthless. Not even worth the paper it's printed on. I don't know why it didn't work out the way I thought. Yeah, and I was ticked off at him for a while. I didn't reject him and I didn't walk away. I was just saying, what are you thinking? Hey, this is such a good plan, you know. But over the years, the struggles and helping people and different things we've gone through ourselves, and whatever we do, whatever happens to us, it's for our own benefit. Things that we need to understand, we need to grow, we need to learn, we need to do. And no, it doesn't always work out. But people get upset with them. People get mad. Take a look at Psalms. Chapter 7, verse 11. God is a just judge, and God is angry with the wicked every day. If he does not turn back, he will sharpen his sword. He bends his bow and makes it ready. He also prepares for himself instruments of death. He makes his arrows into fiery shafts. See, it tells us that he's just, he's righteous. Whatever he's doing, it's not wrong. And he does get angry. He gets angry with the wicked. And even his own people, when we're wicked, he gets angry with us. But we got it coming. We really do have it coming. And when you see people suffering, and it's because God's not doing things the way they think that he should do, and they're suffering. And, you know, a lot of times, not every time, I don't have the wisdom, I can't discern for everything. But a lot of time when you see people, their life is messed up, they've done it to themselves. I know every time things go wrong for me, I've screwed it up. You know, I get in the middle of it and I mess it up. If I just get out of the way and let him take care of it, things work out a whole lot better. Let's go on some more verses here. Psalm 103, verse 8. The Lord is merciful and gracious, slow to anger, abounding in mercy. Well, we're all lucky that that's what he does, and that's how he is. Verse 9. He will not always strive with us, nor will he keep his anger forever. He has not dwelt with us according to our sins, nor punished us according to our iniquities. And yet he lets us go through things, and sometimes we pull down curses on ourselves, and sometimes we mess up our own life. But he hasn't really given us what we deserve. Eternal death. That's what we really got coming. So before I get into some of these verses that talk about him getting angry, I want to show that there's two sides to this thing, okay? He does have patience. He does love us. He is merciful. And he doesn't give us what we really deserve, because we wouldn't be here if he did. Look at what Jesus said about this subject. Matthew 23:37, it says, O Jerusalem, Jerusalem, the one who kills the prophets and stones those who are sent to her. How often I wanted to gather your children together as a hen gathers her chicks under her wings, but you were not willing. See, your house is left to you desolate, for I say to you, you shall see me no more till you say, Blessed is he who comes in the name of the Lord. There's a lot of things that God wants for us, but we won't have it. So this is mainly for myself. And unfortunately, some of the people that need to hear this aren't here and won't listen on the internet, and they're other states, and this isn't directed at anybody really other than myself. And I'm hoping that we all take a look and examine ourselves and what we're doing. Because, couple times I've seen this, but one time, I think it was at Fountain City Park, it started raining and there was a bunch of ducks there, baby ducks. And the rain started coming down and this mother duck spread her wings and all the little baby ducks run up underneath her to get out of the rain. And she's got her wings, she's holding over, and I thought it is worse when I saw that. It's just, they all come running to mama for protection. And here, that's what he wants for us, for his people. So he's there, we're not. Now, it didn't take long, when we open up the books of the Bible, it didn't take long for us to start sinning against God. In Genesis chapter 3, verse 22, it says, Then the Lord God said, Behold, the man has become like one of us to know good and evil. And now lest he put his hand and take also of the tree of life and eat and live forever. Therefore, the Lord God sent him out of the Garden of Eden to till the ground from which he was taken. So he drove out the man, and he placed cherubim at the east of the Garden of Eden and a flaming sword which turned every way to guard the way to the tree of life. Like I said, didn't take long. Adam and Eve, they sinned. They knew it was wrong. Did it anyhow. And so he had to drive them out and then post a guard so that they couldn't come in and live forever. Then the next generation comes along. Immediately, Adam and Eve's own children. Capital crime is committed, a grievous sin. Genesis chapter 4, verse 1 says, Now Adam knew Eve, his wife, and she conceived and bore Cain, and said, I have acquired a man from the Lord. Then she bore again, this time his brother Abel. Now Abel was a keeper of sheep, and Cain was a tiller of the ground. And in the process of time, it came to pass that Cain brought an offering of the fruit of the ground to the Lord. Abel also brought of the firstborn of his flock and their fat. The Lord respected Abel and his offering, but he did not respect Cain and his offering. And Cain was very angry, and his countenance fell. So the Lord said to Cain, Why are you angry, and why has your countenance fallen? If you do well, will you not be accepted? And if you do not do well, sin lies at the door. And its desire is for you, but you should rule over it. Now Cain talked with Abel his brother, and it came to pass when they were in the field that Cain rose up against Abel his brother and killed him. There's a lot of stuff in this one verse here. Okay? First 30 seconds, just briefly, that all the people that think that the laws all came from Moses and sacrificial laws and everything else didn't exist until then. They're sorely mistaken. Because here's two brothers, they both bring a sacrifice, and God accepts one sacrifice and not the other. And the one that he rejected, he says, basically, he says, you know what's right. Do what's right. Do what you're supposed to, and it'll be accepted. But if you don't, hey, sin's out there, and it's gonna destroy you. So just like the Sabbath was forgotten, so was all of God's laws forgotten. And you see all kinds of sacrifice before Moses, and there's laws to do with that. But my point is here, Cain wants to worship God, like a whole lot of other people out there in the world today. They want to worship God. They want to do it, but they want to do it how they think that they feel like. They want to do it with their rules. They want to do it their way. And they think that God somehow should accept that, should allow them to do things counter to the way he said it. Now, there's a lot of freedom in worshiping God. But when there's certain things he says, we're supposed to do this and we're not supposed to do that. And as long as we don't violate those two basic rules, you can do a lot for him and with him. But of course, people want to violate it. You know, the obvious one is the Sabbath, the fourth commandment. We all point our finger at all of the stupid Sunday keepers and say they don't understand, they're blind, you know, and on it goes. But we're no better than they are. Oh, we might understand the Sabbath and keep the Sabbath, but there's all kinds of things that we do that violate what God says to do also. (clears throat) 613 laws. If you take the judgments, which is decisions on basically how you observe a law or how people violated it, 759 rules, in other words. 613 laws, 759 rules. It's not that hard. You could fit them. Sometime I need to print them up. I bet you could fit them in a, in a little pamphlet-sized booklet. I bet you could fit it in 10, 15 pages. If we really wanted to, you could memorize it. Maybe not word for word, but each, you know, keep Sabbath. The largest commandment of all, more words in that one than any of the 10, but, you know, don't kill. You know, just simple phrases. We could all memorize those. Even kids could. From the time they were second, third grade, they're old enough to do that. But we don't do it. And so many people, Sabbath keepers included, pick and choose. Which ones are we going to keep? Which ones are we going to, which are important? Oh, the ones that we keep, those are the important ones, and we'll harp on those, and then the ones that we don't keep, we'll just keep our mouth shut. You know, and we can point our finger at everybody that doesn't do the things we keep. And then, oh, especially if there's a whole group of us that we all ignore these other ones, then we can all feel really good together. It got so bad at one point, it talks about it in the Bible, I brought it out before, that people were sacrificing their children to Baal and then going up to the temple and worshiping God at the temple with the blood of their own children on their hands. You think, what kind of twisted, perverted, that you could kill your own kids and then go and worship God and think somehow that's acceptable. So that's the extreme, but there's a whole lot before you get to that extreme. All right, Exodus, did I get that up there? Nope, next. Okay, Genesis. Here, by the time of Noah, quite a bit of time goes by, and I'm skipping a whole lot of them. But by the time of Noah, the whole world is evil and corrupt. Genesis 6:11, it says, "The earth was also corrupt before God, and the earth was filled with violence. So God looked upon the earth, and indeed it was corrupt, for all flesh had corrupted their way on the earth. And God said to Noah, 'The end of all flesh has come before me, for the earth is filled with violence through them. And behold, I will destroy them with the earth.'" Now think about this. If you're God, you created it. You created human beings, and they couldn't even live in your garden before they started having children and messing things up. And then when they have children, they start killing each other, and then it goes downhill from there. And in less than 2,000 years, it gets to the point where there's nothing worth redeeming. You got to kill everything. Animals, birds. You got to wipe the whole earth out and start over from scratch. You got to save a few of everything that's not corrupted and perverted. And I personally, it doesn't say this, but I think there was even gene manipulation going on then, and that's why it talks Moses was perfect in all his generations. But there's, you know, all these mythological creatures that history talks about, you know, half horse, half man, and I doesn't matter, you know, one with salvation one way or the other. It doesn't say that in the Bible, but from things that it does say, I mean, I think everything was corrupted. That's why he had to destroy it all. Now, from there, I'm going to skip some more. But when God freed Israel from slavery, you'd think, hey, that would be a major thing. You're slaves. God frees you. You'd think that there'd be some gratitude there, some thankfulness there, some wow. Thank you for everything you've done. But it didn't work out like that. In Exodus 32, verse 1, it says, "Now when the people saw that Moses had delayed coming down from the mountain," and the scope of things really wasn't that long. You know, were things going on like miracles? Manna every day? Water to drink? Was all of that continuing? Yeah. So his presence is still there. The miracles are still happening. Just that Moses, he's been gone. You know, gone for a total of 40 days, but they didn't make it to 40 days. It says, "Now when the people saw that Moses delayed his coming down from the mountain, the people gathered together to Aaron and said to him, 'Come, make us gods that shall go before us. For as for this Moses, the man who brought us up out of the land of Egypt, we do not know what has become of him.' And Aaron said to them, 'Break off the golden earrings which are in the ears of your wives, your sons and your daughters, and bring them to me.' So all the people broke off the golden earrings which were in their ears and brought them to Aaron. And he received the gold from their hand, and he fashioned it with an engraving tool, and he made a molten calf. Then they said, 'This is your God, O Israel, that brought you up out of the land of Egypt.'" So they want to go back to their own pagan ways, making their own gods that they can worship. And Aaron, the high priest, he's going along with it. He's the one that physically made it for him. We don't know what happened. Who brought him out of Egypt? Was it Moses? No, it was God. But they want to think their justification, their reasoning, their way. Well, let's take a look and see how God felt about this when it happened. Exodus 32:7 says, "And the Lord said to Moses, 'Go get down, for your people whom you brought up out of the land of Egypt have corrupted themselves. They have turned aside quickly out of the way which I commanded them, and they have made themselves a molded calf and worshipped it and sacrificed to it and said, This is your God, O Israel, that brought you up out of the land of Egypt. So again, they're denying who it was, how they got there in the first place. They go back to worshiping false deities, pagan gods. They're having this big party going on. And God's mad at him. He wants to kill them all. Start out all over again. Exodus next, 32:7. Oh, okay, I read that one. So this repeats over and over, Numbers 14:11. Then the Lord said to Moses, how long will these people reject me? And how long will they not believe me with all the signs which I have performed among them? It's like I said, miracles happening nonstop every day. And they still, you know, you can look, you see the cloud at the day that gives you shade and the pillar of fire that gives you warmth at night. You can just look, there he is. And they still want to reject him. They still don't want to do what he says to do. We say, how could they be so stupid? Well, I got news for everybody. We're just as stupid ourselves. And we talk about you're grafted in. If you're not a physical Israelite, which some of us might be, doesn't matter. If you're not, then you're grafted in. You're still an Israelite. We still act like Israel acted. And he even says, how long will they not believe me with all the signs I have performed among them? It's like, don't they see? Now, somewhere between 3 and 6 million people come out of Egypt. So somewhere out of the 3 to 6 million, how many were saved? How many made it into the promised land? How many was there? Let's take a look and read it. Yeah. Two adults. Now some of the kids made it in. Yeah, under 20. But, two adults. Out of at least probably 3 million, 3 to 6 million. Two. So the Lord's anger was aroused on that day, and he swore an oath, saying, surely none of the men who came up from Egypt from 20 years old and above shall see the land which I swore to Abraham, Isaac, and Jacob, because they have not wholly followed me, except Caleb, the son of Jephunneh, the Kenizzite, and Joshua, the son of Nun, for they have wholly followed the Lord. So the Lord's anger was aroused against Israel, and he made them wander in the wilderness 40 years until all the generation that had done evil in the sight of the Lord was gone. Now let's see. Egypt is your taskmaster, your slaves. He wipes out Pharaoh and his whole army. You see that. You don't go very long. You finally get to the promised land, Israel, the land which God says he's going to give you, flow of milk and honey. So they get 40, is it 40 spies or 20? I'm drawing up the spies.
12 spies.
12. Yeah, I'm sorry. No, it was brain freeze there. 12 spies go out to scout out the land. 10 of them come back. Oh yes, flowing with milk and honey. This is my words. The grapes are like basketballs. Well, basketballs didn't exist then, but I mean, you know, but there's one problem. There's giants. They're going to squish us like bugs. How many people had to fight against the Egyptians when he freed them from the Egyptians? None. God's going to give them the land. They didn't believe him. human reasoning look at it and says, man, this ain't going to work. This just ain't going to work. These guys are monstrous. They're huge. They're giants. They're going to squish us. And because of that, they had to wander around in the wilderness for 40 years until all of the adults died, except for two. Above 20 and above. All right. So let's look at what Israel did and how faithful they were to God. 2 Kings 17:13 says, yet the Lord testified against Israel and against Judah by all of his prophets, every seer, saying, turn from your evil ways and keep my commandments and my statutes according to the law which I commanded your fathers and which I sent you by my servants the prophets. Nevertheless, they would not hear, but stiffened their necks, like the necks of their fathers who did not believe in the Lord their God. And they rejected his statutes and his covenant that he had made with their fathers, and his testimonies which he had testified against them. They followed idols, became idolaters, and went after the nations who were all around them, concerning whom the Lord had charged them that they should not do like them. So they left all the commandments of the Lord their God and made for themselves a molded image and two calves and made a molded image and worshipped all the hosts of heaven and served Baal. Now you think they would have learned their lesson, but they didn't. Just like, you know, house of Judah, completely corrupt. House of Israel, completely corrupt. Just stubborn, stiff-necked, hard-headed. They want to worship, but they don't want to worship how God says to worship. They want to do it their way. So they serve Baal. They cheat on God. They commit adultery against God, their husband. That's why he divorced Israel, sent them packing, because of their adultery against him by fornicating with false gods. Let's continue on, verse 17. And they caused their sons and their daughters to pass through the fire, practiced witchcraft and soothsaying, and sold themselves to do evil in the sight of the Lord to provoke him to anger. These are good church-going folks, right? Murder your own children. Practice witchcraft. And pharmakia. Both. The soothsaying. Verse 18, therefore the Lord was very angry with Israel and removed them from his sight, and there was none left but the tribe of Judah alone. Also Judah did not keep the commandments of the Lord their God, but walked in the statutes of Israel, which they made. And the Lord rejected all the descendants of Israel, afflicted them, and delivered them into the hand of the plunderers, until he had cast them from his sight. For he tore Israel from the house of David, and they made Jeroboam the son of Nebat king. Then Jeroboam drove Israel from all the sins. Then Jeroboam drove Israel from following the Lord, and made them commit a great sin. For the children of Israel walked in all the sins of Jeroboam which he did, and did not depart from them until the Lord removed Israel out of his sight, as he had said by all of his servants the prophets. So Israel was carried away from their own land to Assyria, as it is to this day, and still referred to as the lost tribes. They don't know who they are. God does, they don't. Now, I'm not going to go through it all because there's not time, but has anybody read about the sins of Jeroboam, some of them studied, see what all they did? That's a good study in itself. But he counterfeited, just like Satan counterfeits everything, Jeroboam counterfeited the things that God said. Did it his way. See, the people, they still wanted to worship. It's part of what God puts inside of us. There is this desire to worship. You can have people running around in the jungle, running around a campfire, and they're worshiping. They got all kinds of gods. But we don't want to worship the God that created us, the God that loves us, the God that gives us peace, happiness, tranquility, the one that can heal us. First Kings 19, verse 3. Sometimes we feel like Elijah, but guess what? We're never alone. You know, this, we just got to keep remembering this and refer back to it. Because Elijah thought he was the only one. In verse 13, it says, so it was when Elijah heard it, he wrapped his face in his mantle and went out and stood in the entrance of the cave. Suddenly a voice came to him and said, what are you doing here, Elijah? And he said, I've been very zealous for the Lord of hosts, because the children of Israel have forsaken your covenant, tore down your altars, and killed your prophets with the sword. I alone am left, and they seek to take my life. Then the Lord said to him, go return your way into the wilderness of Damascus, and when you arrive, anoint Hazael as king over Syria. Also, you shall anoint Jehu, the son of Nimshi, as king over Israel. And Elisha, the son of Zaphat of Abel-Meholah, you shall anoint as prophet in your place. It shall be that whoever escapes the sword of Hazael, Jehu will kill, and whoever escapes the sword of Jehu, Elisha will kill. Yet I have reserved 7,000 in Israel, all whose knee have not bowed to Baal, and every mouth that has not kissed him. So God knew who these 7,000 were that weren't evil, that he reserved and he was going to use. Elijah didn't, but he did. So I really took Elijah down a little bit of a peg and told him, says, look, I'm in charge here. I got a plan. Just follow my instructions. Now, what if Elijah wouldn't have done what he said? What if he would have chose somebody else to anoint and chose, went against God's plan? Well, I think God can straighten it all out, but it wouldn't have turned out very well. And it certainly wouldn't have turned out for Elijah. Now, what about Jesus? What do you think the state of things were going to be? Now, think about this. We're coming into a time when it's going to get very difficult. I don't know everything that's going to happen, and I don't know how every individual is going to be afflicted. I think it's going to be kind of bad for people in the United States. I'm not a prophet, and I don't claim these things, but I think the United States goes down the tubes before the mark of the beast and all the other. Now, I could be wrong. Maybe it happens all at once, but either way, there's going to be some severe suffering from people going on. It's just starting. It's been bad for a long time, but it's really starting to affect a lot of people today. When's the last time? The last time you went to the grocery store, you came home, you didn't have hardly nothing. You told me about it. A few little bags, and you said it was three little bags, you know, those little plastic bags. Three little, and they weren't bulging and they weren't full. Three little bags, and she says it was $150. And I don't know where Armando went, but I don't know how he does. Oh, he's still there. I don't know how you do it. Rich Daddy. Rich Daddy, okay. But you can't go to the grocery store and get three little bags. That won't even last one day. Gasoline, fuel, electricity, food, insurance. I don't know if they've done it yet, but McDonald's, I saw a sign this week, and it was advertising, a drink, the tea, soda, whatever you want for, you know, any size. It used to be a dollar. You could go there. Now it's $1.25. What? 25% inflation? Well, it's about right. That's about what inflation is running. But, you know, the lies, people on Social Security, they call it a fixed income. It's not fixed. It's broken. You're stuck. It's like your car. It don't move. You can't get any more out of it. If it's broke, it don't, you know. Those are the ones that are really suffering and you feel for. Because there's not an opportunity for them to go out. You know, anybody that physically and you still got your health and that, work harder, more hours, more jobs. It's not fun. But what about, you know, there's coming a time where the jobs aren't going to be there. At the end of World War II, there was a 78-day supply, I think, of food for the whole world, for this country anyhow, the United States. And how much we got now? They say the stores in the that have a 3-day supply. They don't really, because first time something happens, they're emptied, they're looted. They're just gone. It's not even, it's about a 3-hour supply in the warehouses. In 2005, it was down to like a 20 some day supply. It's less than that now. When famine comes, when things stop, prices are going to go sky high. People are going to suffer. You know, last night we were complaining because there wasn't blankets in our cabin. I had to actually go out to the van and get our blankets and bring them in because it was cool. Mary was cold, so I had to. There's no blankets here. Sheets and beds, you know, on the bed and that, but no blankets. Got to put my shoes on, got to walk out to the van, mumbling and grumbling, you know, about... It's luxury. Had a comfortable bed to sleep in. The pillows kind of sucked, but Mary brought her own pillows. There's nothing really to complain about. I didn't turn the heat on until this morning when I got up and it was 65. So then I turned the heat on. But anyway, what is the state of things where people are hungry, They're fighting. They're killing each other. We're God's for us. We can't buy and sell without the mark of the beast. In other words, you're going to trade your salvation for a loaf of bread? What is the state of things going to be when Jesus returns? Luke 18 verse 8 says, I tell you that he will avenge them speedily. Nevertheless, when the Son of Man comes, will he really find faith on earth? Jesus' words. How much faith is there going to be? Oh, there's going to be some. Don't get me wrong. It's not like there's nobody there. But there's a lot of people that claim to have a relationship, worship God, but when things don't go their way, they kind of fall by the wayside. Wait till things really get bad. If it's like this now, so what I'm saying is I'm not bitching about everybody else. My heart's going out for people. Really. We gotta pray for them and reach out to people. If there's something we can do to help. We all look at things differently than God does. Let's take a look at 1 Samuel 16:7. It says, but the Lord said to Samuel, Do not look at his appearance or at his physical stature, because I have refused him. He's talking about Saul. For the Lord does not see as a man sees, for man looks at the outward appearance, but the Lord looks at the heart. We got to start, quit judging ourselves and by our standards, and start looking according to God's standards and reaching out and helping people if we can help. And the bottom line, I'm going to end with this one, is what's in our heart, because that's what really matters. Jeremiah 17:10 says, I, the Lord, search the heart. I test the mind, even to give every man according to his ways, according to the fruit of his doings. There's a lot of suffering going on in the world. We talked about that before we got started. That's not going to stop. That's not going to go away. We can't change what's going on in the world, but we can work on ourselves. We can't even change our own kids or our spouse, or, you know, we can complain about it. We can say, hey, there's going to be some repercussions, but we can't do anything about it. Only God can do. But what's the one thing that each of us can control or should be able to control? We don't, but should. Ourselves. I can come up to you and say, hey, you really need to start doing this. You're going to say, well, who are you to talk? Here, let me take that beam out of your eye so that you can see the speck in mine. Trying to self-police others never works. The only thing that works is when we try and self-police ourselves. But there are things we can do to help others. When it's within our power to help somebody, especially if they're a believer, and especially if they're a widow or a fatherless child, it should be within our hearts. If it's something we can do, we should do it. But we need to start at our, like it says in, Joshua 24, but as for me and my house, we shall serve the Lord. We need to start with ourselves. God tests our hearts. He's looking for us, what's really there. And just like those who rejected God's power and his miracles, they didn't get to enter into the promised land. Those that do the same thing today are not going to be part of the first resurrection and enter into his kingdom. Did they escape anything from not having faith? From not doing what was right? No, everybody had the same kind of life out in the wilderness. Everybody experienced the same things. God intervened for everybody's with the manna, the water, and everything else. They just didn't get the reward. They just didn't get to enter in, except for two. Are we just going to live our life and be miserable and suffer and moan and groan and complain? Or are we going to actually do something so that when Jesus returns, we can enter into his kingdom? He does everything that's necessary for us to be able to be there. But it's up to us what we do with it, whether we accept the invitation or we reject it, whether we believe in them or we don't, whether we have faith, even against all odds. You say, there's no way. Either we believe God, make sure that it's a promise that he promised, but if it is, we got to learn how to have faith and just do it. And when it comes to Satan, that old, Nancy Reagan made it famous. Just say no. You know, when Satan comes around, it's really easy. Just say no. I bet you all of us could say that if we really tried it. I know all of us can say at least one word, no. Is there anybody here that can't say no? No. No, nobody's here that can't say no. Even baby. One of the first words they learn. Have faith. Pray. Work on yourself first so that we can help others. Thank you.